Northgate friends, what is going on? It is good to see you. It's good to be with you. My name, again, is Mike Goldsworthy, if I haven't had a chance to meet you yet. And I love my Northgate family. I love the opportunity to get to be up here with you. And we get to gather again in person. And so we get to be together in person. And what a joy that is. And one of the things that I get to do is I get to spend some of my time traveling around the country caring for pastors in different kinds of spaces around the country. And I got to tell you, I know that you know this, but the last 15 months have been incredibly hard on pastors, incredibly hard. And they're not the only ones, right? I know that we've got frontline workers in the room, and this has been a difficult season for you. We're so grateful for you. We've got teachers in the room. Like, teachers, you are incredible. You have done incredible work over the last 15 months. We're so grateful for you. But my ministry, my work is with pastors. And so if my work was with teachers, I would be saying this to like superintendents of schools. Or if my work was with frontline workers, I'd be in hospitals saying this. But here's what I want you to know is that I'm grateful that this is a church that would create space for Pastor Larry to get some time away, to have some restoration and to be with his family. A recent Barna poll came out that said 29% of pastors are seriously considering quitting coming out of COVID. About a third of pastors across the country are giving serious consideration the weight, the emotional burden that our pastors have been sitting with is heavy. And so, like, I can say that because I get to come in and let you know that. Like, that's something that, like, Larry wouldn't necessarily stand up here and say. And so I want you to know that that burden has been true across the country. And so creating this kind of space for your pastor is incredibly significant. So grateful that you would do that. And so we've been in this series on this ancient prophet named Jeremiah. And I love the idea of Jeremiah providing us with some framework and some trajectory for how is it that we re-engage coming out of everything that has happened over the past 15 months. Because for Jeremiah, as this ancient prophet, he had this vision for the way that the people of God should live. He had this intention for what it would look like for them to be the community of God's people in their time, in their place, in their cultural moment. But the problem was that vision kept getting disrupted. There kept being turmoil. There kept being things that would happen, roadblocks that would show up that would cause the people of God to get derailed from this vision, from this way that they were called to, from this picture that they had for them. It's almost a bit like what you and I have experienced over the past 15 months, because you and I, we had these visions, these pictures of ways things would be, and they would get disrupted. That wasn't how you thought your senior year should look. That wasn't the vision that you had, and it got disrupted. Chaos happened, and it disrupted it. What you thought that season of life would look like with your kids ended up looking very different. It got disrupted. You were on this trajectory in your career where it was just taking off, and then all of a sudden it stalls out. All of a sudden you're furloughed, you're laid off. That area no longer exists anymore, and you're having to figure new things out. It was disrupted. And this is the experience for Jeremiah as he's speaking to the people of God and helping to be the voice of God to them, speaking through Jeremiah to them. That here's how we're called to live. Here's the vision we have of the way things should be, of what life should look like, and it keeps getting disrupted, and they keep having to figure it out. And we hit this point today in the story of Jeremiah, if you've been tracking with us over these weeks, where his frustration with missing the way that they're called to has sort of boiled over. And I want to pay attention to not only what Jeremiah says, but I want to pay attention to what he says, what it says about him. And so look at what in Jeremiah chapter 25, look at what, and we'll be up on the screens for you here. Jeremiah 25, listen to what he says in verse 3. He says, "For 23 years, from the 13th year of Josiah, son of Amon, king of Judah, until this very day, the word of the Lord has come to me, and I've spoken to you again and again, but you have not listened." Let's just stop at that moment for a bit. 23 years, he says. For 23 years, I've consistently done this thing. For 23 years, I have been persistently faithful. For 23 years, I have done the thing that you have called me to do, God. For 23 years, I have lived the way that you've called me to live, God. For 23 years, I have said the things that you have called me to say, God. For 23 years, I have done it again and again and again and again, and yet it doesn't seem to be working. I have kept at it, and yet there is no response. There's no traction. It almost feels like it wasn't worth it most of the time. It almost feels like I speak into the wind and it just sort of like dissipates and it goes away. I mean, how many of us have actually been doing anything for 23 years over and over and over? That's not normative for most of us. In generations older than mine, maybe for some of you, it would have been normal to have been in a job for a long period of time. That you would have been in that job, that same job, you would have gotten your golden watch, and you would have spent your entire, and then you retire, and you had been at that same place for that entire time. But that's not normal anymore. Our cultural moment is different. It's not right or wrong, good or bad, it's just different. We no longer stay in our jobs for our entire careers. Not only do we not stay in a job with one company for our entire careers, we shift careers multiple times now. This is new. This is a new kind of experience. So doing something for 23 years, like, how many of us do that? We've got a few. You are incredible. Many of us are not doing that. My wife and I, next month, we're going to celebrate our 21st wedding anniversary. So we're moving towards the 23 years. And the reason that you are clapping is because she has put up with me for that long. Because if I were to tell any of our friends who know us and have known us for a while that we're celebrating 21 years, they would be shocked because they're like, you tricked her into this thing, but now she's choosing to be with you. Like, now she knows what she's gotten into and she's choosing that thing. But doing something for that long is not my normative experience. What my normative experience is maybe what some of you experience too at times, is that I get excited about a thing, I go full in on the thing, and then I very quickly give up on the thing. Like, for instance, several years ago, I decided I was going to be a surfer. I live in Long Beach, California, and we're about 10 to 15 minutes from the beach, and I thought, like, I need to be a surfer, because I would travel to other places, and they'd say, where are you from? And I'd say, Long Beach, and they're like, oh, do you surf? And I was just tired of saying no. And so I thought, I'm going to become a surfer, and I thought, this is going to be this great spiritual discipline. I'm going to paddle out in the water, and it's going to be me and God, and I'm going to, like, it's going to be restorative. It's going to be this great hobby. I'm going to love it. My brother had a surfboard that I borrowed from him. I went out and I bought a wetsuit, and I was like, I'm going to be a surfer. And I don't know if you've ever tried surfing before, but it's a bit of work. You get on the surfboard and you paddle out there, and it's a lot of work paddling out there. And then when you paddle out there and you think this is when the fun stuff happens, no, it is not when the fun stuff happens. Instead, what happens is you sit on the board and you sit there waiting for a wave, and you wait and you wait and you wait. And then a wave starts to come, and so you start paddling to catch that wave, but it's not a wave that's going to break. And so you put in all that effort and you didn't get to ride it, so you paddle back out again and you wait. And you wait, and you wait some more, until finally a wave starts to come that's going to crest just right, and you paddle into that wave, and you catch it, and you stand up on it, and you're standing up on that wave for 4.7 seconds, and then it's over. And I had this realization while I was a surfer that it is a lot of work for very little payoff, and so I was a surfer for 2 weeks, and I gave my brother back his surfboard, and on a completely unrelated note, I happen to have a used wetsuit for sale. It's hardly used, if anybody needs one. That's for me, that's my much more normal experience. That what happens for me is, it's not that I do a thing with a long commitment and persistence, but instead I throw myself into something with passion and with fervor and excitement, only to watch it sort of wane. And that especially becomes true if it becomes difficult along the way. Because I have a vision of the way something's going to be when I start it. I have this, like, intention that this is going to be incredible. And I throw myself into that thing, and then something is hard. I'm not as good at it as I thought I should be. I've watched lots of YouTube videos, and it wasn't as easy as the YouTube videos made it out to be. I do, and suddenly it gets hard, and then I dissipate with it. I mean, the thing is, it's not really hard to start something, but seeing it through and finishing it, that's difficult. And that becomes true in all sorts of areas of our life. And so for Jeremiah, it's in the midst of his anguished complaint that we also get a picture of his persistent faithfulness. I mean, he's complaining about how long he has been at this thing without getting a response, but his complaint gives us a window into the fact of, like, you have kept at it. You've continued going. 23 years you have done this thing. In fact, what he's done is what the author and Pastor Eugene Peterson would call a long obedience in the same direction. I love that phrase, a long obedience in the same direction. That line has become one of my life goals. That my hope would be that, like, I would get to the end of my life, and that when people are reflecting back on my life, when people are reflecting back on sort of the waves of my life and how it, like, touched them, impacted them in some sort of way, that one of the phrases that would be true that people would say is that Mike lived a long obedience in the same direction. And for Jeremiah, his long obedience in the same direction, it wasn't easy. And it's never easy for any of us. For some of us, that route is a little bit easier than others. For some, that route has a lot more roadblocks and a lot more difficulties along the way. But it is never easy. For Jeremiah, it was met with hostility. For Jeremiah, it was met with difficulties. But the thing is that for Jeremiah, the roadblocks, they weren't in his control. It was the way that people responded to him, and that was outside of his control. He could only do the thing that he was called to do, but he couldn't control what happened with that. He couldn't control the roadblocks. He couldn't control the difficulties. In fact, look at how it goes on here in Jeremiah. In verse 4, it goes on, and he says, "And though the Lord has sent all his servants, the prophets, to you again and again, you have not listened or paid any attention. They said, 'Turn now, each of you, from your evil ways and your evil practices, and you can stay in the land the Lord gave to you and to your ancestors forever and ever.'" He says, look, this isn't new. Your non-response, the way that you aren't listening, this isn't new. This isn't because of me. This isn't because my methods aren't working. This isn't because of something that I'm doing. This is on you. And what Jeremiah could have done is he could have allowed the people and the situations outside of his control to derail him. That there was the thing that he was called to do. There was who he was called to be. There was the kind of life he was called to live, the things he was called to say. There were all of those things. And then there was the stuff that was trying to derail it. And he could have let those things derail it, but they were out of his control. He says, look, you have been doing this for years and years and years. And so he could have given up so many times along the way because he just wasn't getting the response that he wanted. Things weren't working out. And that's the thing sometimes, is that when we do what is good and right and true, it doesn't always mean that we're going to get the response that is good, that we want to have. It doesn't mean that it's always going to work in the way that we want it to work. That is not the sign of Jeremiah's effectiveness of his ministry. The effectiveness of Jeremiah's ministry is not whether or not people turn and follow what he's calling them to, because they don't. Otherwise, he would have given up a long time ago. That the picture of the effectiveness of his ministry is, was he faithful to what was good, right, and true? Was he faithful to who God had called him to be? Was he faithful to the way that he was called to live? I mean, for Jeremiah, he could have started strong. He could have started with passion and energy and excitement. Here is who we are called to be as the people of God. And he could have hit these roadblocks where again and again and again he says that they didn't listen and they didn't respond and they turned against him. And he could have easily given up. And yet the reason that you and I are talking about Jeremiah today, thousands of years after he would live, the reason that there'd be a book in the Bible that bears his name, the reason that one day that Jesus would be born and he would have followers and he would go out and he would be teaching and then he would be performing miracles, and that when he would ask some of his followers, who do people say that I am? They would say, some people are comparing you to Jeremiah. That you remind us of this prophet of old, that there is something about Jeremiah that continued on, that kept in the waters, that stayed significant to the people of God, that they were like, there's something about this prophet, there's something about the way that he lived, there's something about the ministry that he did, there's something about the work that he was committed to, that he did not give up, that he was persistent and faithful, and that one day that Jesus, when he's asking people, who do you say I am? And that people would say that you remind us a bit of this prophet of old. And the reason that all of that would be true is because Jeremiah defied the normal experience of just fizzling out. He defied the normal experience of being inspired and hitting difficulties and then just sort of tapping out and saying that this isn't for me. Instead, he gets to this point where he's able to say, in the midst of his anguish and complaints, he's able to say, for 23 years, I've consistently done what I was called to do. For 23 years, I've consistently done the right thing, regardless. And to do that wasn't easy for Jeremiah. If you're to read throughout the entire book of Jeremiah and read the account that's there, what you find is constantly throughout the book is that he wants to give up. Over and over and over again, that he's like, God, this is hard. Why did you call me to this? This isn't what I want to do. In fact, at one point in Jeremiah 19, it's one of my favorite lines in the book. The way the Hebrew actually reads is that he says to God, God, you seduced me. You tricked me into this. You pulled me into this. You put up a facade. I thought that this was going to be good and beautiful. Like, I thought that this was going to be this way that was going to be like life-giving, and I'd have so much energy. And God, instead, it's been hard. It's been difficult. All that happens is that people call me names and they come after me. And I go out and I speak the words that you've given me to speak. And it's like it falls on deaf ears. God, like, why did you call me to this thing? And so at this one point, there's this moment where he's offering one of these complaints to God, like, God, why do you have me do this thing? I'm tired. I'm over it. There are other things that I could be doing. I would rather be doing that other stuff. That looks a lot easier. And it's in the midst of that, in Jeremiah chapter 12, that here's what God's response then would be to Jeremiah. God says to Jeremiah, if you have raced with men on foot and they have worn you out, how can you compete with horses? And if you stumble in safe country, how will you manage in the thickets by the Jordan? Here's what he's saying. He's giving a metaphor. God's giving this metaphor, this picture. And he's saying, Jeremiah, if you are worn out racing men on foot, how are you going to compete with horses? Because this one is easier, and that one's going to be a whole lot harder. And if you have this path that you're walking on, if you're hiking and you have this path that it's flat and it's easy and there's nothing in your way, and you have a hard time with that, how are you going to handle it when it's overgrown with thickets? How are you going to handle it when there's all the brush in your way? How are you going to handle it when it's much more difficult? And in other words, what God is saying is saying, Jeremiah, how will you handle the harder, more difficult experiences of life if you can't handle these ones that are right in front of you right now that actually require less of you than what's to come? Jeremiah, you're going to have these moments that are going to call for more from you. You're going to be confronted in ways that you can't even imagine right now. You can't even fathom the ways that you're going to be confronted. You can't even begin to picture the difficulties that you'll experience. You don't have a category for them because they have not yet happened to you. And if right now you can't handle the things that are happening to you now and you want to tap out now and you want to give up now, how will you handle these difficulties that are going to come to you later in life? Jeremiah, what you're going to come across later is going to feel like a walk in the park to what you're going through now. It's going to feel like the difference between running a race against people versus running a race against a horse. It's going to feel like the difference between going on a path that is clear and easy versus going on a path that's covered over and it's difficult. If you can't handle now, how will you handle later? And the thing is that your life right now, it's setting the trajectory for the way that you'll handle the things that you'll experience that are going to be harder and more difficult later in life. The things that you don't know that will be asked of you, the demands on your life that haven't yet been put on you. The choices and decisions that you make now, they're actually training you for how you're going to respond in those moments that you don't know what they will be, but what you do now is training you for how you'll respond in those moments, because your life is built on a series of small decisions. And so we're not going to do the big, difficult thing later if we haven't been doing the small things that will help us get to that place. Like for instance, I have this vision that like at some point I'm going to be called to radical generosity in order to help somebody. And when that moment comes, when that moment sort of crosses my path, I want to be the kind of person who's going to respond with radical generosity in that moment. Like, don't you want to be that kind of person that when this moment is called of you, that you would be somebody who would be able to be radically generous in a way that it would actually change the trajectory of somebody's life? And that I want to be that kind of person. But here's what I know. Studies actually show that if you're going to be that person, it has nothing to do with how much money you are making at that point when the opportunity presents itself. And it has nothing to do with how much money you have in your bank account when the opportunity presents itself. It has nothing to do with what your liquid assets are at that point. Here's what it has to do with whether or not you will respond with radical generosity when the moment presents itself. It has to do with whether or not you have been making smaller, generous decisions up until that point. It's like a muscle that we develop. Because we don't like show up to the gym and be inspired and have this vision that I'm going to be a bodybuilder and I'm going to bench press 250 pounds and I'm going to show up and do that thing. You go do that thing and you will be dead, right? Like, you're not going to be able to do that. Instead, what you do is you consistently show up week in, week out with smaller weights. And then you work up to a little bit heavier weights and you consistently week in, week out, show up. And then eventually, over time, because you have been consistent with the small things, then eventually you're able to handle the larger thing. There are going to be these moments in your life where you're going to be called to engage in something that's bigger. And are you doing the things that will help lead you there? Like, there's going to be moments where maybe like your character is going to be attacked. There's going to be moments where it's going to feel like people have turned against you in some sort of way, big ways, small ways. Some sort of way it's going to feel like people, and I'll tell you that when that moment happens for me, I want to be the kind of person who, there are two responses that I want to have. I want to have empathy and I want to have curiosity. I want to have empathy towards the person who's responding in that way and curiosity, wondering, like, what is it that has, like, what brokenness are you going through? What hurt are you going through that's causing you to act in this way? That's causing you to treat me in this way? What's going on for you? But here's what I know is that I will not naturally respond in that way. If I want that to be true then I have to find small ways where that's true now. And a small way might look like when I'm on the freeway and somebody is driving like a jerk and they're like cutting people off and they're going quick. And what my natural response is that I make up a narrative about who that person is, about why they're driving that way and all the things that are true of him that I can say in my car that they won't hear me say because like I'm in my nice safe bubble of my car saying those things. But what if instead when those moments happen, I instead invite empathy and curiosity and I say, huh, I wonder if like there's somebody pregnant in their car and they're trying to get to the hospital. It's probably not true, but like, why not? I will never know what's actually true in the car. So why not let it be something like that gives me empathy for the person? Maybe they're incredibly late for a business meeting that's so important that they're going to lose their job if they don't get there in time. And I just start being curious and having empathy for what's going on there. And this little thing that doesn't cost me something, so that I'm building the muscle so that one day when there is the bigger thing that does cost me something, that muscle is already there. I've been practicing it. I've been rehearsing it. And so do you want to build the capacity to do something more significant? Do you want to build the capacity to handle things that are more difficult? Your smaller habits that you're engaging in now will help to reflect the direction that your life is headed. And so, are they reflecting the direction that you want to have? Like, what do you want to be true in your life 23 years from now? And what are the small things that you can be doing today that help to build that muscle? What will happen as you build that muscle over time is the same thing that happened to Jeremiah. As we get to the end of Jeremiah's story, which we won't get to today, but you'll get to in coming weeks, what begins to happen is that there are some people who begin to trust Jeremiah, begin to look to him for direction, begin to realize that Jeremiah has some cachet that comes with him because of the way that he has lived consistently over a long period of time, because he has lived a long obedience in the same direction, that there is a weight of character that he carries with him. And so they begin to recognize this wisdom that comes with Jeremiah. And over time, living consistently in the same direction will begin to produce wisdom. Now, wisdom does not happen. You don't get to be wise just because you got older. There are a lot of people who are older who are not wise. But you do not get to become wise without getting older. There are no 20-year-old sages. There are no 30-year-old sages. There are no 40-year-old sages. You have to have lived life to become a sage. You have to have lived life to gain wisdom. And it's living the life of consistency in the same direction. It doesn't mean that we don't mess up. It doesn't mean that we don't get derailed at times, but it means that we keep bringing ourselves back to that point. Wisdom is gained through that persistent faithfulness, course correcting along the way to ensure that the trajectory goes and continues in the right direction. And so friends, I'm not asking you today, I'm not asking you to be somebody who's in the same job for the next 50 years. Maybe some of you that will be true of. My guess is that most of you that won't be true of. I'm not asking you to never move and to stay in the same house that you're in now, to not make changes. I'm not asking you to not change majors in college and to not change career paths along the way. I'm not asking you to have some hobby that you try out and that you feel like, I can't ever abandon, because Mike told that story about, like, so I'm going to be a surfer because I decided I'm going to be a surfer. I hate doing it, but I'm going to do it. Like, I'm not asking you to do that, but here's what I am asking you to do. I'm asking you to consider, what kind of person do you want to be 23 years from now? What kind of character do you want to have 23 years from now? What kind of stories do you want your kids to tell? What kind of stories do you want your neighbors to tell 23 years from now? What kinds of ways do you want to be responding to moments you don't even know that you'll be confronted with 23 years from now? What kinds of things do you hope people will stand up and one day say about you as they are reflecting on your life? And you get to start determining that now. Whether you're 15 or whether you're 50, you can start living in a way that one day perhaps someone may say of you that you lived a long obedience in the same direction. May you be able to say, like Jeremiah, for 23 years I've been doing this. And regardless of what has happened along the way, regardless of the roadblocks that have shown up, for 23 years I have been doing this. May that be true of your marriage, and then you're able to say it for another 23 years. May that be true of the way you parent your kids, and then you're able to continue to be saying that. May that be true of the way that you started your business with this idea of the way that you would treat people and what you would do. And then along the way, there was reality of stuff. And may it be true of you that 23 years into the business that you started, that you would be able to say, this has been consistently true of the way I've treated my employees and my customers. What do you want to be true of you 23 years of now? That begins now in the small things that we're doing now. And so today we have an opportunity to celebrate communion together. And communion is a reflection and a remembrance and an entering into the last meal that Jesus would celebrate with his disciples. It's this way of remembering and reflecting on the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, where we remember that though the path to the cross was difficult, And though the path to the cross was in some ways not what we would want it to be, that he chose to go that path anyways. I think of what the author of Hebrews writes about Jesus going to the cross. The author of Hebrews says this, that let us run with perseverance a race marked out for us. Let us continue a long obedience in the same direction. And the author of Hebrews says, this is how we do that. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him, consider Jesus, who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you do not grow weary and you do not lose heart. In the midst of the difficulties of life, in the midst of the difficulties of trying to figure out what does it look like for us to live as faithful people of God in this moment, in this time, in this place, the author of Hebrews says that we turn to Jesus, we fix our eyes on him, we remember that for the joy set before him that he would endure the cross. And theologians will spend all kinds of time trying to figure out what is the joy set before him. And there's all sorts of things that joy may be, but I'll tell you what one of them is. One of them is you are the joy who is set before him. That for God so loved the world that he would give himself up for you. And so what I want to ask you to do is I want to ask you if you would take on the bottom, don't take off the top yet because you'll spill your juice. On the bottom, there's a small wafer. And if you take that out, when we take this, we remember at that last meal that Jesus would share with his disciples, that he would take bread and he would break it and he would give thanks and he would say this about the bread, that he would say, this is my body which is given for you, that when you take it, do this in remembrance of me, the body of Christ. And likewise, he took the cup. And he also gave thanks. And he said that this cup represents my blood, which has been poured out for the forgiveness of sins. Whenever you drink of it, do this in remembrance of me. Remember the life that I lived. Remember that I would go to the cross. Remember that death couldn't hold me and that I'd be raised from the dead. And so as we drink this, we do it in remembrance of Jesus. I want to invite you to just take a moment of quiet reflection, remembering Jesus who would endure the cross for the joy set before him.